From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made earlier this week when a young boy was at his speech therapy appointment. The boy, now 4.5 years old, has received speech therapy since he was 2. At this appointment, his mother and his speech therapist cried together. Their tears were tears of joy. The boy's mother said finally her family can understand what her son is saying. She told us, quote, "The importance of being able to express oneself at any age is critically important, but particularly when you're in the early stages of defining who you are, it's easy to overlook the more profound results of these services," end quote. Well, early intervention services like speech therapy are in crisis in Monroe County and across New York State. There is a shortage of special education teachers and therapists in the county, and now there's also a lack of service coordinators, the people who serve as liaisons between families and providers. That shortage has led to a waiting list beginning December 1st for children under the age of 3. Monroe County Executive Cheryl Donolfo acknowledges the crisis and says the state is to blame. She says New York's early intervention program is broken, and the state's inadequate reimbursement rates for coordinators has led to at least 5 local agencies ceasing to provide service coordination over the last 10 years. Catholic Family Center announced last month that it will stop providing coordination services in January. Early intervention advocates are calling on the county to authorize emergency spending to hire new coordinators. But Ms. Donolfo said that would only put a Band-Aid on a much bigger problem. So what can be done to avoid the crisis and help more than 1,000 children in need of care? Our guest this hour can help us understand the state of early intervention services and their impact on local families. And we will welcome them now. Pete Nabosny is the Director of Policy for the Children's Agenda. Pete, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Janet Rosenberg is a physical therapist with Step-by-Step Developmental Services. Janet, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Brittany Jensik is a parent whose children have benefited from early intervention services. An amazing parent, by the way. A mother of how many, Brittany?
21.
A mother of 21. Well, it's great to have you here. Did you recognize the story we opened the program with there?
I did.
You want to tell us about that 4.5-year-old?
I have 21 kids. 14 of my children have benefited from early intervention. The little guy that you're talking about is actually 6 now. He's a miracle. He's an absolute miracle. He was born at 22 weeks, had significant problems associated with the prematurity. He was given a very, very grim diagnosis by doctors, and we knew we already loved this little guy, and we were going to bring him home and surround him by love and by hope, and we did just that. So he, shortly after we brought him home, he's adopted, we started early intervention services. And had pretty intensive services. He had a grade 3 and grade 4 brain bleed, was likely to be diagnosed with cerebral palsy and subsequently has been diagnosed with it. He did not pass his hearing exam. He had lost vision completely in one eye and had compromised vision in the other and was not eating. So he had a multitude of medical problems, and we sought the support of early intervention for our family because we were slightly overwhelmed, as you could probably imagine, but also for him to give him kind of the best chance at thriving. And it made all the difference in the world for this little guy.
Amazing. Well, we're going to be talking about the personal impacts here. Frankly, we know colleagues. Everyone probably has friends. The story shared at the outset is unfortunately common. Well, I would say fortunately it's common for children to have these breakthroughs, these moments, for Brittany's family, for many folks we know. And we're going to be talking about that because if everyone agrees there's a crisis, the question becomes, how are you going to fix it? And Pete Nabosny, is crisis too big a word here, or what are we facing in this community?
No, it's not too big a word. I wish you could find a bigger word for it. This is unprecedented in New York State, what we're facing right now in the history of the early intervention program. This has been growing for years. We've had a shortage of providers increasingly for a number of years now. We've had growing waiting lists for kids who have been evaluated in need of services that can't get them because we have a shortage of providers. And now, as of next week, every referral for evaluation to the early intervention program will be placed on a waiting list. So that's every child being sent home from the NICU. That's every child that's born with Down syndrome. That's every child who's not sitting up on schedule. This is an absolute crisis and catastrophe for our community.
And I know there's a bit of a blame game happening now. I shouldn't call it a game. I think there's a serious conversation about funding and a serious conversation about why these things are happening and who is most responsible or who could fix it. You do have the county and you do have the state in some ways pointing at each other. I want to read a statement first from County Executive Cheryl Donolfo, and then I'd like to listen to some of what she's had to say about this. She couldn't be on the program today, but her office sent extensive notes on this, and we appreciate that. And here's one of the statements that we have from the County Executive. Quote, County Executive Donolfo addressed concerned parents before the Human Services Committee last evening to make one thing clear. If the state won't champion their cause to fix the state-mandated early intervention program, she will. The state's broken rate-setting structure has driven providers out of early intervention, imperiling families' access to both direct services and service coordination. A state task force offered recommendations on how to fix early intervention back in 2011, which were incorporated in the 2011-2012 state budget, only to be ignored since. The county executive will be pledging to make early intervention reform Monroe County's top legislative priority in Albany for 2019 and intends to use the full weight of her office to force the state to fix the crisis it created once and for all. End quote. Pete Nabazzi, that's a strong statement on the state of affairs. Do you agree with her assessment of the problem starting with the state?
Yeah, absolutely. The state sets the rates for these programs. The state contracts with providers. The state manages the payment of providers through a contract with a fiscal agent. The state has not raised early intervention reimbursement rates in two decades, and in fact has actually cut them. So they're lower today than they were in 1996. And that's before you even start to think about things like inflation, which is a real thing. And, the state has held the line on spending in the early intervention program for years and has refused to raise reimbursement rates. And that is causing the shortage of providers and the shortage of services for children who desperately need it in this community.
And what could be done? I guess there's two questions. I suspect you want long-term changes in terms of funding and policy there. Mm-hmm. And then we may need this, if this community is going to have these services fit the need, we may need short-term solutions. Is that right?
Yeah. So responsibility for this crisis does lie with New York State, but Monroe County can and should take some immediate actions to limit the consequences for children and families in this county. The reason we're kind of here today is because of the service coordination shortage that we have in the county. And just to kind of back up for a second, when a child is referred to early intervention, state law says that they have to be assigned a service coordinator promptly. And that service coordinator meets with the family, they enroll them in the services, they collect information about them, they set them up with an evaluation, and that's what starts the process of a child receiving, if they do qualify, early intervention services. The county has always managed the referrals to early intervention, continues to do so. What they've had to do increasingly, because community-based providers have closed their programs, is they used to kind of just manage it at the point of referral, and now they're managing the entire life of the case with early intervention. And the county doesn't have the staff to do that. Historically, providers in the community, a number of different community-based organizations have provided the service. There are about 40, 45 different individuals working at different agencies providing service coordination. Right now, it's down to 9. In January, it'll be down to 4. So all of that burden has come over to the county. And, that's tough for the county. They're having a really hard time managing it. And in response, they've put forward this idea of a waiting list. I realize that this puts the county in a tough spot, but it is not nearly as a tough spot as what it's putting families into who will not have services, the ability to even start the process of getting services when they refer themselves or are referred to early intervention. So we're asking the county to find the funds to hire 6 service coordinators as soon as they possibly can to avoid the need for this waiting list right now. It will still be a challenge. We're still going to have too long of waits to get services, but we need to do something to support the families in this community. The county government is elected by the people in this community to serve them and to support them and to work with them. And we've got to do something today to stop the bleeding here.
All right, so let's listen to some of what County Executive Cheryl Donolfo said at that recent meeting about this idea. Let's listen.
County simply can't hire our way out of this challenge until we fix the state's broken rate-setting structure. We would just be putting a Band-Aid on a major wound that's been caused by the state of New York. Up until this point, our community's cries have fallen on deaf ears with the state. When asked about the early intervention challenge recently, the governor said he wasn't aware of it. His budget director said it was probably a regional problem. Well, let me say this. This crisis is real, and it won't just impact Monroe County. This is a threat to every child who may need early intervention services in every corner of the state.
Is she wrong with any of that, Pete?
Well, I'd agree with, 90-something percent of what she said. Again, we think that the state does need to do a lot to improve the early intervention system. Not just there's a rates issue, but there's also the administration of the program. There's the structure of how folks get paid and a number of other issues. So I agree with all that. But we also, we have a county budget. We have decisions that we can make around these things. We have priorities that we can set. And, we do put bandages on people when they're bleeding. And so, I would encourage the county to do that. We have the ability to hire some individuals who can support families who would be employed by the county. We don't have an alternative at this point. The Children's Agenda has made this our top priority this year. We're organizing folks all around to advocate in Albany. But like right now, in the next month, we have to figure out what to do for this community. And our county government needs to figure out what to do for this community to support the most vulnerable children that we can imagine in our community. And so, this is on all of us to own, including the county. And certainly, we're pushing our state delegation to make this their top priority as well. But we've all got to do our part here. And for the county, part of that is hiring the staff that they need to avoid maintaining a wait list.
Just a couple of other points with Pete Nabosny from the Children's Agenda. And because we don't have County Executive Donolfo here, let me just try to kind of interpret some of what we've heard from the County Communications Office. And I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Number one, what would it cost Monroe County? Do you know?
No, we haven't gotten that number from them. However, these individuals, if they hire these six service coordinators, they would still be billing for services. Now, they'd lose money. That's why no one can afford to employ these folks right now. But it wouldn't be the cost of six full-time employees because some amount of their salary would be paid through them, billing the early intervention program, just like Catholic Family Center has been billing and other agencies. I'd love it if the county would provide, the cost estimates for that, but we don't have that at this point.
You're asking for six individuals to be hired by Monroe County for as long as it takes?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that could be 3 months, 6 months, a year, more?
Yeah, I mean, we think that if the state addresses the specific issues of service coordination, which are both kind of the structure of how folks get paid and the rate, eventually we'll see, Catholic Family Center, when they closed their program, they said, if changes are made, we want to reopen this program. So the county hires now, at some point, if we're effective in Albany, community-based providers will start to open these programs again because they want to provide this service. This is part of their mission. We don't know how long that's going to take, again, we have to do something now to head off this crisis.
Okay, and so we're looking at probably tens of thousands into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, right?
Yeah, I'd say hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you're running the Monroe County Budget Office, if I'm running the Monroe County Budget Office and I met for you privately over coffee with this, I'd say, Pete, our community is in crisis. We've got kids who badly need it. Where am I going to come up with $300,000 overnight to do this when I wasn't the one who created this problem?
Well, look, this is the first year in many years that we've reduced the county's tax rate. That, as far as I can understand, is about a $4 million savings right there. So if we had left that tax rate even, we would have more than enough money to provide to hire these service coordinators. I get that's a significant priority, but the act of putting together a budget is about establishing priorities. And one of those priorities should be having enough service coordinators so that incredibly vulnerable young children are able to get connected to the services that they need.
And then the other concern that they may have is, what if they were to say, look, Pete, we all want to solve this problem. If we do this, quote unquote, short term, New York State sees us do this short term, New York State will say, oh, good, Monroe County took care of it. We don't have to. And at the state level, they might decide, if the counties just decide they're going to step up and do this in a short term, they'll make it a long term because they're not going to put kids at risk. We don't have to do this. Is there a concern about that?
Yeah, look, I mean, that is a concern. And I'm sure that that's part of what's going through, the leadership of the counties thinking on this. And you know, I get that. And I'm sympathetic to that. I think, you know, mandate relief is a big priority of the county, and unfunded mandates are something that they speak about a lot. And
that is
a legitimate issue that the state has pushed mandates down to the counties for a long time. And so, you know, completely sympathetic to that. However, I have to come back to that the individuals that are being caught in the middle of this fight between the county and the state are incredibly needy and vulnerable children and their families at what is the most difficult point in any family's life, when they have this little, you know, infant and toddler who there's something wrong and they need support and service. And I get all of the arguments, but the amount of money we're talking here that the county would have to step up and is not a tremendous amount of money in the context of the enormous, you know, county budget. And the Children's Agenda, other organizations, advocates, providers, and others are willing to credit the county for stepping up here and to blame the state, which is what we're doing. And we want to join with them and make this a priority. So, you know, again, I get the county's concerns about this mandate issue, but we can't put this issue in the middle of that county-state fight.
All right, so it sounds like, to sum up, what Pete Nabazzi from the Children's Agenda is saying is, this is a problem created by New York State, dumped locally because it affects families and children locally. But until the state fixes it, which could take months at least, there is a moral responsibility for someone to fix it, and that's going to have to be the local government.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so let's hear from our other guest now. Janet Rosenberg, who's a physical therapist with Step-by-Step Developmental Services. How do you feel about this?
I agree with everything that Pete said. I think we all need to work together. We need to work with our county legislators. We need to work with our state legislators for a positive outcome, because at the end of the day, it is meeting the needs of the most fragile. And really, there's no greater investment than our children.
What have you seen change in your career with this when it comes to reimbursement and the thoughts about what is going to be available for parents and children in this community?
That's a good question. I think from within the community, it's we've definitely seen a reduction in the number of providers that service early intervention, which has resulted in wait lists for children throughout the calendar year. And it's hard for agencies to entice therapists to come to work with them as well.
Hmm. As a parent, I want to turn to Brittany Jensik, who is a parent whose children has benefited from some of these early intervention services. Has it been so far with your kids relatively easy to work with the system? How has it gone for you?
We started working with the system in 2002 and have been involved with early intervention since then. It's definitely changed. There are fewer providers. Mm-hmm. There are the services are not as easy to obtain, but we really are still in that spot where they're at least we've really been lucky. We've had much the same team for a long time and for a lot of our children. But I can say that there are people that are having children now. I work as a resource from the hospital and often talk with parents whose children have just been given different diagnoses. These families are at one of the lowest points of their lives, and they need the support. And I think it also kind of even goes beyond that this is not just a matter of, you know, can we hold somebody's hand for 3 years? This is a matter of making a difference in a child's life that will have lifelong implications. I have, you know, several children who have received early intervention services that, you know, it hasn't enabled them to just walk versus use a wheelchair, which, I mean, that has happened for some of my children. But I have kids who have gone through early intervention that are now going to, you know, they're going to go to college. They're going to have full-time jobs. They're going to, you know, be very productive members of society giving back. And I don't have a doubt in my mind that those children would not be where they are if it were not for those early intervention services. Studies have shown over and over and over again that that 0 to 3 period is absolutely critical.
And tell us again, Brittany, the kinds of services that your kids have needed. I'm going over the list here. There's a lot of early intervention program services: physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, special ed services. The list is a long one. What are the kinds of services, once again?
It is. My children have received OT, PT. There's been some support for feeding that we've needed. We have a teacher of the deaf. We've had a teacher of the visually impaired. Speech, special ed. We've really been able to utilize all different services. Right now, I believe there's only currently one TOD, teacher of the deaf and hard of hearing, in early intervention. And that's because the rates are just not there to be able to pay these people to stay. There are just changes need to be made on so many levels. And I agree that it's a state issue. But the reality is, if we don't address this now, there won't be a program to fix at the state level. The program will implode. It cannot continue in the short term the way it is without some immediate crisis intervention. So, certainly it still needs to continue to be aggressively addressed with the state, but there won't be anything to address with the state if we don't address it at the county level immediately.
Okay, I want to go ahead and read an email, and I've already heard some feedback. Listeners, if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. We're 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about Pete Nabosny, 1,200 children locally, and a couple hundred new referrals each month. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's ballpark of it ebbs and flows a bit, but that's generally where we are for birth to three. There's also, we don't want to lose sight of preschool special ed, which is a slightly different system that serves the same kids as they turn three and four, is also facing some real challenges, and the numbers of kids being screened and found in need of services there is also really surpassing our capacity. And it's a lot of the same providers of these services. But so birth to three is early intervention, but we've got this problem from birth to till really school entry for kids at five.
Amy writes to us and says, I'm writing in regard to crisis and early intervention. I'm a special education teacher, and I've been providing early intervention services for more than 18 years. When I began my career, if a child qualified for services, whether it be occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, or special instruction, they were able to receive those services immediately. It has been so disheartening to watch a program that is incredibly beneficial crumble. I currently have children on my caseload, waiting for months to find a provider for a specific service. There is an incredible shortage of providers. And now to have children be put on wait lists to even start the evaluation process is heartbreaking. The time from birth to three is so precious, and providing services at the earliest time possible makes the biggest impact. Providers have not seen an increase in reimbursement rates for these services in over 20 years and have even had a rate decrease during that time. It's very challenging for agencies to stay in business, which has resulted in fewer and fewer service providers. I really hope that the county and state will step up and change the reimbursement rates so children can receive the services they need to thrive. From Amy. It lines up with what your argument is entirely. But let me read what we have from Monroe County's communications offices in regard to the wait list issue, which has been a question. So let's talk about that. This is the statement we have from them. They wrote, quote, it's been suggested that a wait list for early intervention is illegal. That is incorrect. State statute does, however, require that initial early intervention intakes and evaluations be completed within 45 days of a child's referral to early intervention programming. Referrals could come from parents, physicians, or some others. As the administration made clear during the recent discussion regarding early intervention at the Human Services Committee, we are currently working to reallocate existing resources within the health department to prioritize the initial intake evaluation process, minimize any potential delays, and remain in compliance with the 45-day requirement, end quote. Pete, does that satisfy you?
Well, so I'm glad that they're taking a look at their operations and figuring out what they can do to limit the harm that this wait list is going to create. But the 45-day mark is already very difficult to hit in terms of getting the family enrolled, getting the evaluations done, getting the service plan developed, and that's something we already, you know, it's when things are going well, it's still a challenge to hit that 45-day mark. Setting up a wait list where the county hasn't really indicated how long the estimates are that, but we're talking many weeks into months, is what I've heard. So I can't see how the establishment of a wait list doesn't result in the county being completely out of compliance with that 45-day requirement. In addition, state law also says a service coordinator has to be assigned promptly. Now, different people could come up with different definitions of promptly, but I don't think 3 or 4 weeks is prompt. And moving even beyond that, the fact is that if we take a step back and we think about a call goes into the Office of Early Intervention for, you know, a referral to get evaluated, and that family is told, you know, sorry, we're going to put you on a wait list for we don't know how long. Legality of this aside, and I do think there are some real questions about whether or not what the county is doing is in violation of state and federal law. It's in violation of how we should be behaving as a community towards families that are in desperate need of support. So we've just got to do something about it. You know, the lawyers can figure out the legal piece to this, and we've been talking to a few, but this is something that transcends kind of our legal obligations to our moral obligations.
Pete is getting pretty close to the Oscar Rogers model of, do you remember the character on SNL, the weekend Kenan Thompson played Oscar Rogers during the financial crisis? He said, we've got a three-step solution here. Fix it. Fix it. That's
what he says.
You know, repeat as necessary until
yeah,
the problem is fixed. I mean, let me go ahead and grab some phone calls because we have the phones have been ringing here. Diane in Fairport is first. Go ahead, Diane.
Oh, hi. I wanted to call because I just retired as a service coordinator for Monroe County. It was my job for the last 22 years with the county, and so I know it really well. And I did have a couple of comments, and it's a lot more complicated than people might think. It probably takes a good 6 months before anyone even is up to complete speed and understanding and being able to do the job without a lot of support. There's been more and more administrative and paperwork types of things that have been demanded by the state since the beginning of early intervention in New York State. And we found, even at the county level, that it was hard to keep the younger people coming in. They took a look at the job and the stress level and said, whoa, and decided to just look elsewhere for employment. So we were even having problems keeping people interested in doing the work. So I think to just say, well, hire 6 people, and that's going to solve all the problems, it really is a very, very complicated problem. And I want to say hi to Janet and Brittany. I know them.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Hi. So that was my only comment.
Diane, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. Let's let all of our guests respond. Pete, you want to start? Go ahead. What do you think?
Sure. I don't want to sugarcoat the fact that if the county committed today, which I think they should, to hiring these 6 service coordinators, that that's a silver bullet that will, fix things today, because it won't. But the longer we wait to start the process of hiring those folks, the worse this is going to be for families in Monroe County. So we got to do something here. I'd also note that the reason we're in the crisis is because a number of community-based providers that are employing service coordinators who are trained and experienced have been closing those programs and laying those folks off. So there's out there in the community a pool of people who do this work and have done this work for a long time, and I'd hope that they could be referred to those jobs when the county decides to fund them and set up the hiring process.
Okay, some thought. Go ahead. Yeah.
Sure. My thought as a physical therapist is that we hate to see children go on a wait list. We know that intervening early is what's most important. And the first 3 years of life are crucial to brain development and maximizing independence across all the different developmental domains. And the longer we wait to start services, the bigger the gap. The bigger the gap, the greater the cost is to the taxpayer to intervene, for a therapist to intervene and to help children. So I totally understand what Diane is saying, and it is a very complicated job. And certainly, even as a physical therapist, we've seen tremendous changes in the requirements that are out there for us as well. But we need service coordinators now in order to avoid children being placed on hold and not receiving the services that they need.
Okay.
I hear what Diane's saying. I think she's certainly right in coming from her perspective, having taken that role on for so long. But, you know, if we were to ask the county to hire 6 service coordinators, that certainly would involve civil service exams and hiring process and then a learning curve. You know, possibly there's a way the county could contract with one of these agencies that's previously closed and hire from, as Pete was saying, that pool of service coordinators that have recently stepped down from the job that already know the job. I don't think anybody's unwilling to problem solve, but the reality is we have to have the county intervene in some way, shape, or form immediately, or there won't be a system to fix at the state level.
Yeah. Can I just add, Brittany said several times, you know, there won't be a system. And that's really what we're talking about here, that if we stop referrals for evaluation and into services for some number of kids for some period of time, we have a lot of providers of this service that are really on the brink of closing right now. The folks that are trying to keep their doors open and employ the physical therapists, the occupational therapists, the special ed itinerant teachers, the speech therapists they're really struggling because they've been managing a business where they've had no ability to increase their revenue for many, many years now. And so, you know, I don't know what the consequences of a month of no referrals would look like. And that could be a greater loss of capacity of providers in this community. So then, you know, 6 months from now, we've somehow worked out this waiting list issue, and there's even more kids that can't get services after they've been identified and evaluated because we've just lost more community capacity. So I think she's spot on with that point, and we need to, again, this is why this is so urgent, that we do something as soon as we can and not delay any longer.
Well, I'm going to read a couple of other emails, and I want to try to put a little context into what Pete Nabosny, what the Children's Agenda, what advocates like them are saying when it comes to what could happen here. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the crisis in Western New York, in New York State, here in Monroe County and in related counties, when it comes to early intervention services. And we're talking young children, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, special ed services, and the like. Hundreds, if not thousands, of kids every year in our community need this, and we are seeing providers shut down. And there's no doubt there's a crisis. Just about everyone is blaming the state, but Monroe County is saying it is the state's problem. We recognize it. We're going to do what we can to put the pressure on the state to fix this as soon as they can. But so far, Monroe County has not said they are willing to step up and fund what the Children's Agenda is asking for, which is at least 6 new positions in the interim or however long it takes. Let me just do a little bit of math here. Let's say it's $300,000 for those 6 positions. Is that roughly fair? Is that a good guess, Pete?
Yeah, sure.
The county budget is $1.23 billion, yeah. And I am not good at math, but I think $300,000 is 1/41st of 1%.
Sounds about right.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
So it is, so it's 1/41st of 1% of the annual county budget is what the Children's Agenda is asking for, roughly, in the short term. Now, it's not that Monroe County is saying, we hate kids, we don't want to do that. They're saying we love kids and we recognize the crisis and we are going to make this our single biggest priority on the Albany legislative side in 2019, and we're going to put pressure on New York State, and they have to fix it because they created the problem. That's where we are, and we're working through these questions as best we can. Let me go ahead and read a couple of emails. Monique writes, Evan, while the county is saying it's legal to put children with developmental disabilities on a wait list so they don't get the health care, if they don't get the health care they deserve and need, they should realize that doing that is morally wrong. The county has a responsibility to our children. Leah says the services provided, if provided when they are necessary and most effective, can be the difference for some kids between getting, quote, caught up and continuing the regular way with other kids, or needing supportive services of various kinds, paid for by taxpayers, from IEPs and their attendant expense through jail because of frustration or lack of abilities, possibly throughout their entire lives. That's from Leah. Let me ask the mom in the room here, Brittany Jensik, what you think the difference is for kids who need these services in an acute way if we wait, if we have to wait 6 weeks, 6 months, et cetera, versus getting help immediately.
I guess so two examples, and I'll kind of try to make it brief, but one is my kiddos that I was talking about earlier. I have several kiddos who have had early intervention. They were nonverbal, not talking, not walking, had severe sensory issues, diagnosed on the autism spectrum. These kiddos will now, they are now 11 and 16. They will, they go to school, they are in gen ed, they will go to college, they will drive, they will marry, they will be very participating, active members of society giving back. For these kiddos, it made the difference between them potentially costing tax dollars to support them for the rest of their lives and being able to kind of flip that and be, you know, productive members of our society. For the little guy that I brought to the meeting the other night, we started services for him immediately upon bringing him home. Janet, is my son's PT. One day happens to realize that he's slightly hyperreflexive. So he's kind of high tone. His muscles are tighter than they should be. He's reacting differently than he should. And she brings it to my attention. I kind of say, well, I don't know what that means. And she said, well, it can mean a lot of different things, but I think you should check it out. Well, you know, to kind of make a slightly more complicated story a little shorter, we checked it out and he was in emergency brain surgery having a shunt placed the next day. He was hydrocephalic. He was having pressure buildup in his brain. He needed a shunt placed and the shunt saved his life. And truly, Janet saved his life. I mean, had I not had the support of people surrounding me, letting me know what was typical, what was out of the ordinary, giving me information, being resources for me, for the family, for my child, he would not be here today. He would not be alive.
I want to ask Janet Rosenberg what you think about that issue of quick intervention when it's needed as opposed to waiting weeks or months.
So we know research shows that, like I said before, intervening early is crucial and critical because birth to three, the brain produces more than a million neural connections each second. And during the first 3 years of life, a child's brain triples in weight and establishes about 1,000 trillion nerve connections. So early is the time. It's when it's most important. And I can think of a number of children that I've worked with over the years that maybe came home from the NICU, had very complicated births, and had a variety of different medical needs. I can think of children that had a diagnosis such as Down syndrome. I can think of children that just were not meeting their milestones. They weren't rolling or they weren't sitting. And the thing to remember is that movement is what leads all aspects of development. If your child is not moving, they're not going to explore. If they're not exploring, they're not going to expand on their skills for learning and cognition. If they're not moving and they have decreased strength, it can impact their ability to produce language and speech. So it's very, very important to be targeting our children at that young age because it does affect all other aspects of development.
One more quick question before our only break, and then if you're on the phone, we're going to try to get in as many phone calls before the end of the hour as we can. Pete Nabosny, what have you heard from state lawmakers on this? Because clearly, if you agree, and County Executive Cheryl Dinolfo agrees, that the state has caused this problem, what is Governor Cuomo saying? What about local delegations? What's going on?
So we've been reaching out to our local delegation for a number of months now before this most recent service coordination waitlist issue. Our delegation has been responsive to this. They recognize that it is a big need in this community, and They've joined us in pushing for it in the last budget year. It was unsuccessful last year, but we're going to plug at it again. Again, our delegation has been responsive to this issue, and we're going to keep encouraging them to be even more responsive this year because kids in this community desperately need their support. The governor, unfortunately, the Democrat and Chronicle editorial board meeting, he said he hadn't heard of this issue, which is really disheartening because we've been working really hard to ensure that our elected officials are aware of this issue. And so I'm not really sure what's happening there. We're reaching out to folks in the executive branch to try to figure out what we can do together with them on this issue. But we've obviously got a lot of work to do, and getting this on their radar is a top priority.
Are other counties experiencing this?
Yeah, I've been speaking to folks around the state, kind of working on similar. We have some peer organizations elsewhere in the state that we talk to. Monroe County seems to be a bit ahead of the curve. It's a really bad curve to be ahead of, than other places for what seems to be a variety of reasons. We have a really we have a great healthcare system here in Monroe County, and we have a lot of children who are born who survive that otherwise wouldn't if we didn't have the facilities we have in this community. That does create more kids needing these kinds of services. We also have the GROW Project that's kind of run by Children's Institute that really aggressively screens kids at age 3 throughout the community. When you're doing comprehensive developmental screening and really trying to identify kids who have these needs, you find more kids who have these needs, and that taxes the shrinking supply of service providers. So the fact that we have some really great programs, institutions in this community, that it saves kids' lives and it identifies kids in need of these services, it's also had the effect of making our waiting lists larger than maybe you see in Erie County and Westchester County and elsewhere. But they are seeing it and they're talking about it, and they know that they're kind of next if this kind of continues. I don't know if it's 6 months from now or a year from now, but it's happening elsewhere too.
We're talking hundreds and then thousands of kids in our county, in our state, who are going to need early intervention services at a young age, critical services that increasingly they can't get. The governor, not really aware of this, he is now, but generally you've got Republicans and Democrats, you've got providers, everyone agrees that we've got a crisis. Now it's a question of who's going to do enough to fix it. And while we dither, kids are going to suffer. That's the reality. That is not a commentary or an editorialism. That's actually what's happening. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're back to your phone calls next on Connections. Let me tell you what's coming up Friday on the next Connections. We sit down with students from across Monroe County to talk about the Rock to Change Student Summit on Race. The theme of this year's event was intersectionality. Our guests share what they learned and how they hope to create a more equitable society. In our second hour, World AIDS Day is Saturday. We'll be joined by representatives from Trillium Health to discuss the latest in HIV/AIDS research and treatment. It's all coming up tomorrow. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before your phone calls, I want to clarify, just so there's no confusion on issues, when Pete Nabosny says you're asking Monroe County to hire 6 people, would that cover the full need?
We don't. I mean, we think it would cover the immediate need to set up the wait list. Because these providers have been leaving in droves in the community, there's a real great need for service coordinators, and those 6 people will be quite busy, probably not able to handle the responsibilities that they have. So in reality, we probably do need more than that. But we've been told that 6 would kind of get us to the place where the county could, sort of muddle through and manage the cases that they have.
Because Don is writing us saying you need 6 people for months. Is this something that volunteers can do? If this makes such a huge difference to vulnerable children, surely we can find 6 people in the entire county who would be willing and able to help. Is that an option?
We've actually had a couple people that have sort of emailed with that same sentiment. And we would encourage folks to email the county and maybe offer their services. But as I think Diane, who called in earlier, mentioned, this takes a lot of skill to to do this job. And I'm not doubting the skill of anyone who would volunteer to do it, but it takes a lot of training, it takes a lot of understanding of the law, of the early intervention system, which is extremely complex. And we need to have, you know, professional paid staff who are doing this work. This isn't just, you know, it's not a, we need some volunteers to step up. We need to hire folks to do this.
Bonnie in Rochester next. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes, it's kind of hard to know where to start. As I said to the person I spoke to before this, I really asked WXXI to please have some of us who've worked in these fields in the public sector for many years. It's such a tragedy. It's awfully hard to talk about it. I myself worked for State of New York doing exactly what they're talking about. The service coordination, we had full interdisciplinary teams in every quadrant for this region. And so if you go south, there's another region, so they had that as well. Since it started in the 70s, as part of the effect of the deinstitutionalization. So that had an effect on not only people moving residentially into communities, but had an effect on serving people in the community who had never been institutionalized. And that comprised one of our strongest efforts. But what happened was when the governor was elected the first time, he went after public employees. And I don't know how many people in your setup there remember that, but he went after them big time. That set off a situation in which a number of these employees who had been working, now understand this, had been working on this very same principle you're talking about, the early intervention, that we did all of that, happened in the 70s and were lasting for 35 to 40 years before the governor decided it was time to cut the budget. And cut the budget meant whatever they could get away with. And at that time, there were a number of people, after you worked 30, 35 years in a program, you know, you start to get your retirement. So they took that opportunity to end up eliminating, and I want to say it loudly, eliminating the whole freaking program. We told them then, every single thing your guests are saying, every phrase that they have said, are things that we said would happen. And this is what makes this so, you want to know I'm angry? Yeah, I'm angry. I'm angry at people who don't listen to us when we say these things are going to happen. And by the way, because we also had the state connection to some of these legal services, because of the nature of the public sector setup, we could probably have more influence on using the legal options to resolve some of these illegal, what I think is illegal, waits for people on dire need services. So we would have a little bit more, not a little bit, because we could advocate. One of the problems with some of the service coordination that is done by not-for-profit agencies is they have no protection because they're not part of the public system. When you're part of the public system, you can speak out and criticize what's going on in your own system. We did that all the time. So this is a crime, as far as I'm concerned. And the way you can fix it is to restore what has taken away. Because one of the reasons they did this is they don't want to pay people. They want, you know, anybody who's worked in these systems and knows behind the scenes, the reason wasn't so much that they didn't care about disabilities or that was the result, but they don't want to pay people. They don't want to pay them a living wage. They want to see if they can dump it on somebody else. So the tragedy of this, it could have been avoided. It still should be avoided. And there should be a restoring of the state, not just responsibility for payment, but a responsibility of making sure these services. And the only way you do that is to have well-trained, committed service coordinators that work with people long-term from birth to ever how long they want it. That's what works, and that's what we did, and that's what did work. This was a very successful program, and it just is a typical, terrible, terrible situation. So I think I know the solutions to it, but of course, you know, that means the state has to make a commitment to do the right thing.
All right, Bonnie, thank you. Linda in Penfield, if you can keep it within 30 seconds, I want to squeeze it in. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So one of your panelists brought up that places are closing their doors and people are out of work, and perhaps lawmakers can get behind the idea of finding money because it will keep people working. and I pride ourselves on job creation and, you know, being a good place to live. Well, let's pony up some dollars to keep these places open, and let's pony up some dollars, like the caller said, for a living wage, and not, you know, perhaps hire part-time people where you can get away with not giving them benefits. So that's really all I wanted.
All right, Linda, thank you. I think that's a good piggyback on what Donnie, the point that Bonnie is making. So, Pete, in our remaining seconds, what do you want people to do about this?
Great. So they can visit our website, www.thechildrensagenda.org. There's a petition right at the top of the page that you can click on to send a letter to the county executive and your county legislator, urging them to fund these positions and stop this wait list. You can also give public comment at the county legislator's Ways and Means Committee meeting December 6th at 5:30 p.m. You need to call 753-1950 the day of the meeting to sign up to speak. And then the full county legislator meeting on December 11th at 6 p.m. Again, you have to call 753-1950 the day of to speak. And we really need people to come out and make their voice heard that the county needs to step up and then join with organizations like the Children's Agenda to fight in Albany for these changes.
All right. And again, if you missed it earlier, this is not a case of sort of the Children's Agenda versus the county. I mean, there's a lot of agreement on the diagnosis of the problem, where it started, the call for New York State to step up. And I suspect, Pete, next year in 2019 legislative session, you're going to see a lot of advocacy there.
So, sure hope so.
All right. So it's thechildrensagenda.org. Pete Nabosny is the policy director. Thank you for being here today, Pete.
Thanks for having me.
Our thanks and good luck to Brittany Jensik, an amazing woman, a mother of 21 whose family has benefited from these services. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us
and
today.
And our thanks to Janet Rosenberg, physical therapist with Step-by-Step Developmental Services. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you.
Rob Braden, engineer. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.